Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Tuesday, August 30th. I'm Ray Graff. Today it's the Copyright Forum, and joining us to answer your questions about protecting your writing, music, and art are Paul Rapp, Polly Law, and Bill Westwood. They are here now in the green room plotting their strategy for the show. Not really. They're complaining about the heat. But if you have a question about copyright law, fair use, or what's in the public domain, by golly, we got you covered. 800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. You can also use the email and send your question to voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Paul, Polly, Bill, your copyright questions coming up after the news. Oh, hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. It's the Copyright Forum today, and we've assembled a great panel to answer your questions. Full disclosure, it's the same panel we always have. Paul Rapp is an intellectual property lawyer and writer. He represents musicians, writers, fine artists, and businesses involved in the creative economy. He's a frequent lecturer on intellectual property issues. Bill Westwood is one of the country's leading medical illustrators and a professional member and past president of the Association of Medical Illustrators. Polly Law is a past president of the Graphic Artists Guild, an organization focused on the rights of artists. She is a designer, illustrator, and artist whose works are in numerous private collections. She has an Etsy shop, for Pete's sake, of her printmaking works, art, words, tea prints. It's always great to have these three on the show. If you have a question about intellectual property, give us a call, 800-348-2551. Again, it's 800-348-2551. You can also email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Welcome all.
Hey. Hey.
Hello.
Polly Law, before we get started here, what is the Etsy? My kids like Etsy, and I have no idea.
Oh, it's a marketplace for individual creators and suppliers to flog their wares.
And how is the flogging going?
Well, it's only been up for a few days, but so far so good.
Okay, and it's art, words, tea prints. If you search that, they'll find your stuff?
Yes, and it's tea like in the tea you drink.
Gotcha. All right, and Bill Westwood, you said right before we went on the air, you're busy reclaiming your copyrights. What are you talking about?
Oh, well, the 1976 copyright law had a clause in there that permits artists or creators or authors or whomever to reclaim their copyright under certain circumstances after 35 years.
Yeah.
And I've always retained my copyrights, but in my long career, I have sold my copyrights three times. And around 1990, so the time is coming up where I'm going to start the process for reclaiming those copyrights for myself.
So you sold them, made money on them, presumably, and now, after a certain amount of time, you get to take them back. That's a pretty
yes.
good deal you
yeah,
got going
there.
Yeah, it's
a good deal. Well,
and 35 years just flies
yeah,
by.
Yeah, I know. Well, the Copyright Office, the justification for this was the Copyright Office... I'm sorry, the Congress recognized even back then that there were typically unfair bargaining powers between creators and large corporations. So they put this provision in, which allows people to reclaim their work. For example, J.K. Rowling reclaimed the copyright to...
Harry Potter.
Thank you. Senior moment to Harry Potter. She was only paid $3,500 U.S. At the time she first got it published.
Oh, boy.
So obviously being able to reclaim those copyrights has made a huge difference to her.
Absolutely. Paul Rapp, what have you been up to?
Nothing.
It's summertime.
I'm sitting in front of the air conditioner.
Isn't that nice?
And dealing with the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office.
Okay, so you have been doing something.
I've been doing something, yeah. But much of it hasn't been pleasant. Not like these guys, you know.
Hang on, you're an attorney.
Yeah.
So when it's unpleasant, that is many more billable hours. Oh, are we joking around here? Saw this in the New York Times, and I thought of you, and it was serendipity, frankly. Here's the headline. Warhol's images of Prince, social commentary or copyright infringement? I could read from the New York Times, or Paul Rapp could tell us about this case.
Yeah, it's Lynn Goldsmith photographs of Prince that Andy Warhol...
The entertainer Prince.
Right, as opposed to the former Giants defensive back Prince Amukamara.
Yeah, the artist who formerly was known as Prince. And you know, Warhol did his usual thing with the multicolor, you know, multi-panel...
Yeah, silk screens.
Lynn Goldsmith claims that she only found out about it, and I'm amazed that this actually flew through. She claims she only, like, found out about it a couple of years ago and went out and sued the Andy Warhol
Foundation.
The Andy Warhol
Foundation.
They paid
her $400 or $4,000 or something that Vanity Fair did to allow the use of a photograph so that he could do this back in the day.
Is that how he got it? He paid Vanity Fair?
No, I don't think he did. I think Vanity Fair paid the photographer.
Oh, right. Okay.
Right, but to use one image.
Yeah. And so, you know, is it fair use? Is this an acceptable taking of Lynn Goldsmith's photograph? Because is it transformational? Is he making a societal comment, like you said? There's a number of issues. One is, you know, it's kind of opaque. This is kind of like the Shepard Fairey Obama thing a few years ago, which never concluded because Shepard Fairey just screwed it up by lying to the court. But, you know, does Lynn Goldsmith own the outline of Prince's face? I mean, in her original photograph, there's lighting, there's, you know, all kinds of stuff going on, most of which has been removed by Andy Warhol. So what's left that's protectable for Lynn Goldsmith, you know, I could argue would be negligible. But in any event, a judge in New York City ruled that it was not fair use, which, I mean, what it's going to do to Andy Warhol's foundation is going to be kind of devastating if they find this to be infringement, because he did this all the time with a lot of photographs. The Second Circuit, I believe, ruled that it was fair use, and now the Supreme Court is the lovely people at the Supreme Court, you know, who are all kind of artistic intellectuals, they're going to take a swing at it.
It was actually ruled that it was not fair use.
At the Second Circuit?
I don't know.
The district court.
But that decision that it was not fair use is the one being appealed to the Supreme Court.
Okay, so the Second Circuit. Okay. So it, you know, we should have gotten the answer to this, 10 years ago with the Shepard Fairey case, and we didn't. And now we're going to get, you know, hopefully something coherent about the nature of fair use.
Well, but if you know anything about the process of silk screening, you would know that he worked with that photograph. And he just kind of copied and copied and copied and copied it until a lot of the information was gone.
Was gone, yeah.
But then it's still based on the photograph. Mm-hmm. He did not sit there and look at the photograph and hand draw his shapes.
And isn't that the same way he always worked?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. And Polly Law, you're a visual artist. What do you think?
I don't think it's fair use, no.
Yeah, I want to see. It's not fair use. There are all kinds of amicus briefs lining up on each side. The Copyright Office has come out and said that it shouldn't be considered fair use, as has the U.S. government.
Did the Justice weigh in?
Yeah.
Wow.
And
why would the Justice Department weigh in on that?
I honestly can't answer the question. I'm sorry.
Maybe it wasn't just. It could have been.
I know is the government. Yeah. If I know we're going to be discussing it, I would have reviewed everything.
I didn't know we were discussing it until about 20 minutes ago. So.
And at this point, I think it's been briefed, but it has not yet been argued.
Correct. It'll be argued, I think, next month or in October, rather.
Okay, so sometime early next year, we'll probably get a decision.
Right, fair enough. It's the Copyright Forum. Paul Rapp, Polly Law, and Bill Westwood join us today. The number is 800-348-2551. Email is voxpop@wamc.org. Let's take a little break. It's been very stressful. We'll be back in about a minute. Thank you. Vox Pop on WAMC. It's the Copyright Forum. Ray Graff with you. It's just about time to hit the phones, but let's grab one email here before we start with Paul Rapp and Bill Westwood at Poly Law. This one is from Keith in the Berkshires. Please explain the differences and advantages or disadvantages in registering and protecting one or more original songs, lyrics, and music with the Copyright Office versus a performing rights organization like BMI or ASCAP or both. That's the first question.
Well,
okay. Hi, Keith. you want to do it all? They're not mutually exclusive.
They're two very different organizations.
Yeah, I mean, you want to register the copyright to your songs. Period. And then if you think your song is going to be getting some airplay or going to be getting any kind of exposure out there, then you want to, as a composer, as a songwriter, you want to register with BMI or ASCAP or CSAC. Those three are competitors, and they each have their pluses and minuses, and that's way too much for me to get into right now. If you have recordings, you also want to send your your compositions. If you have recordings, that's what I want to say. If you have recordings of these, you want to register those with Sound Exchange, and write that down, soundexchange.com. And you also want to register the compositions with the mechanical licensing, the MLC, Mechanical Licensing Collective.
Okay.
But, if you want more information and learn about this, my friend Casey Ray has a book called Digital Copyright, which is absolutely spectacular. And then there's the Bible of music business books, Donald Passman's Everything You Need to Know About the Music Business.
And also the question here, and the second question from Keith is one we talk about almost every show. How many songs can be registered in one submission with either entity? We'll leave BMI and ASCAP out for a moment, but I think he's probably talking about the Copyright Office.
Yeah, unpublished, you can register up to 10. If you have a record album that you're selling as such, as a CD, there's a special form for music record albums, and you can do up to 20 songs on one. But you've got to be a little bit careful with the registration because you're dealing with two different copyrights here. One's for the composition,
right,
and the other is for the performance or the recording of it. So, it can get kind of sticky and confusing.
All right. Anybody else before we go to the phones?
Yep.
Hearing nothing, we go to the phones. 800-348-2551. Malcolm in Amherst, you're first. Malcolm, go ahead.
Good afternoon, and thank you very much, panel, for your time. And thank you especially, Ray. You asked the best question.
Oh, thank you very much.
I have, it's kind of almost a three-parter, but most of it's like yes or no, so I'm hoping you'll tolerate this.
Sure.
So I have a friend who actually passed away about 2 years ago now. Before he did, I helped him just basically through CD Baby put out a bunch of his music, one CD worth. But these were songs that had been around for years and years. He'd been passing them around on cassettes and, other just unpublished CDs. And so is that going to be an issue if we put 2020 as the copyright date on the CD when we put it out?
No, because it's that when you put the copyright notice on, it's the date of publication, technically. Copyright notice is not mandatory anymore. It hasn't been for 30 years. But, strictly speaking, it's the date you put on is the date of the initial publication.
It's not the date of the registration?
Mm-mm.
Okay.
Publication.
But, yeah, I use
that
both because it doesn't really matter. But, yeah, you're fine.
Okay. Next.
Okay. And we have, there's a new CD, meaning CD of stuff that he made before he passed away, that I'm working with his life partner. We have permission to put this stuff out. I am assuming that the first one was an already published work, but that the second one, should we just publish it first and then copyright it as a published work?
It really doesn't matter. I think it's easier to register it as an unpublished work, although it really doesn't. They're backing off the requirement that you, if it's a published work, that you deposit a copy. They're backing off that in some circumstances. So, yeah, it doesn't really matter.
Okay, and just the last thing would be artwork and stuff on the album cover. You know, we had permission from an artist who actually got permission to make a painting from a photo. So she got permission from the photographer. We have her permission to put this on the covers. Should we just copyright this, though, without any of that stuff, just as audio, just to keep that stuff separate? Because we don't want to really deal with their copyrights.
Yeah, yeah, I think so. You know, some of the new music album registration process has a thing where you can include artwork and liner notes and all that kind of stuff. But you don't want to do that because you're not claiming the copyrights to them. So I would just, yeah, let them be.
All right, Malcolm.
Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks for listening. We appreciate it. 800-348-2551, the telephone number. It's the Copyright Forum with Polly Law at Paul Rapp at Bill Westwood. We go to NYC. Willow, you're on.
Hey there. Thank you so much for taking my call. I am calling because I have a few original songs that I just like to share, like, on Spotify. People have been encouraging me to share them, like, on Spotify and social media. But I've been really worried about just doing that because, you know, then they could just be stolen. So I'm curious what the first steps are if I'd like to do publish them in these forums.
Register them with the Copyright Office.
Yeah. And as Paul pointed out, you can register up to 10 songs together if they haven't been prior published.
And as a general matter, as a general matter, I like to tell clients, if you're putting stuff up on the internet, don't worry that people are going to steal them. You know, you should be more concerned that they won't.
I know. I'm not surprised you're saying that, but it's just a little fear at the back of my head. So.
But yeah, but to protect yourself in case, you know, somebody sticks them in the next Ridley Scott movie, you know, your song, and without your permission, if you're registered, you can go take them down. So register with the Copyright Office.
All right, Willow, thank you very much. And now to New Canaan, Connecticut. It says here on the screen, no Canaan. Oh, is it North Canaan? I gotcha. All right, because we know there is a Canaan and not no Canaan. Jason, you're on.
Yeah, hey, how's it going?
Good.
I got one a little out of left field for you guys.
Sure.
I've been looking for an advocacy group to specifically lower the duration of copyright laws. Because I thought for a long time that they're absolutely asininely long, especially for, like, film. Because, you know, the intent of copyright is to encourage more creativity. But it goes beyond the author's death, which seems counterintuitive.
Well, some authors have families that outlive them.
But wait a minute, hold on.
Yeah, but they can't.
Can I just say that your contention that it is to increase creativity, is that in fact the case? I thought it was protecting the cha-ching for the person who made the thing up.
No, it's to encourage artists, to enable them to make a living off of their work,
and
so that they can make more.
They create more work.
It's the same thing. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, which would create more work. Yeah.
Gotcha.
So, like, I understand, like, their families should make money off it, absolutely. But their families also can't create that material. So you're not encouraging more material at that point.
No, you're encouraging baseless lawsuits, basically.
Yeah, I understand, like, 50, 60 years is awesome, but it's like, I find it ironic that most of the people advocating for longer copyright laws are like Disney, who benefited off of it.
Yeah. Well, you know, Matt Gaetz did introduce a bill to lower the term of copyright. He said to the original term of 28 years, which is wrong because the original term
14.
Was 14. But he did that solely to punish Disney.
Yeah, for not supporting
the
Don't Say Gay.
Totally wrong.
But I agree as a general matter that it's the terms are way too long. It's tantamount to forever. But, you know, it's kind of, this is now the accepted term all over the world. And getting
so
it rolled back is going to be.
Really,
yeah.
Go ahead, Jason.
So the answer is there really isn't any advocating group for shortening it, because that's what I've been looking
for
sure a while.
I'm sure Disney's part of a group of other copyright holders who would be happy to extend it.
Well, let me just speak from a creator's point of view.
Yeah.
Someone who makes their living doing artwork every day. I don't have a problem with the current term. Actually, in researching some an article for a group I was giving a presentation to on a week or two ago, I went through all the copyright terms of all the countries that are signatories to the Berne Convention. And actually, there are several countries that have a term of the lifetime of the creator plus 100 years.
There is.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Huh.
Well, and another thing, I mean, I'm speaking also as a creator. Create your own damn content.
Ouch.
You know? This goes back to the thing with the photographs of the, you know, Andy Warhol using photographs. Create your own damn content.
Yeah, but to get to your question, yeah. Jason, I don't think there is a advocacy group. I think the Electronic Frontier Foundation, you know, has talked about it. They're about as close as you're going to get to a group, the EFF.org, to having someone. But whether they're doing anything actively now or not, I kind of doubt it because there's so many other things going on with digital freedom and whatnot, privacy.
Yeah. Okay.
Yep.
Well, thank you so much for me, taking so much time for me. I guess I'll just have to go out there and start it myself.
Okay.
All right, man. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Jason, 800-348-2551 is the telephone number. 800-348-2551. Copyright Forum in progress. Polly Law, Bill Westwood, and Paul Rapp are here. I would say I have to sort of agree with Bill here. Hmm? I mean, really, why... You create something, right? You make a movie, you do a picture of a spleen, whatever it is you do. Why isn't
portrait
it,
of a spleen.
Right, a portrait of a spleen. That's a great name.
Isn't that Trump?
So why would it not be Bill's life plus 1,000 years, or till the end of Western civilization, which could be a couple of hours.
Yeah. But I mean, let's not shorten the
why
term.
Not forever? What's the case to be made
well,
for even
because,
having
this? Because you do want that work to eventually go into the public domain to benefit society.
Yeah, the public domain is a wonderful thing that society
I love public
from.
Domain, too. But as a creator, wouldn't you just say, look, it can benefit society, and I can still benefit as well?
Well...
Oh, that's Creative Commons, sort of.
Yeah. I just was helping somebody with a contract, and this publisher wants they don't want the copyright, but they want all rights to use the artwork basically forever for the entire term of copyright.
Yeah.
And hello? Why do they need that?
Do they know who they're dealing with?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah, most publishing agreements are like that too, and people are concerned. And I'm like, no, you're basically giving them the copyright.
You've got to push back,
even though it's going to be in your name.
Yeah, you've got to push back on that stuff. So
the number here is 800-348-2551. The email address is voxpop@wamc.org. It's the Copyright Forum. This is from Wendy in Chicopee. Copyright rules for making collages. The rules of collage art. Oh, now we get some sighs. All right. Well, I'll just read it anyway, and if you choose. If not, we'll just take another break. The rules of collage art confuse me, says Wendy. I enjoy making mixed media collages and finding partial images, photos, or illustrations from a variety of magazines or books in order to share my art online or for gifts or even sale. Would I need to contact the original publisher for each partial image I used in my work? And that is from Wendy in Chicopee.
Only if you're making prints of the collage.
So you can make one thing.
Make an original piece of artwork. Sell it.
That's fine.
And there is some, could be a problem if you've made one work, but one image is like the overwhelming focus.
If you've got a big face of Mickey Mouse in the center of your collage, you are in trouble.
No way. All right.
No, make it a. You have to make the bits anonymous, basically.
Right.
And you know, one thing I've noticed about doing these shows, Disney doesn't get a lot of love out of anybody. on the panel.
They're the 800-pound gorilla.
Yeah, they
world.
Are.
But what if Disney was doing medical illustrations? and paying you some big money, then you might like them
they
better.
They wouldn't be paying him big money.
That's right.
They don't pay the creators.
Why do you think I'm reclaiming those three copyrights, Ray?
Well, why don't you draw a picture of Donald Duck's spleen, and then we'll see what happens. All right, this is from Joanne. A photo that I took was used by a professor for the cover of his book. Mm-hmm. No compensation or attribution to me. I contacted the publisher and subject and said, at the very least, there should be a photo credit on subsequent books. They listed my info, but spelled my first name wrong. How annoying. Are you surprised by this? Is there anything else you think I should do? I'm not interested in putting more energy into this, but do you find this surprising? The book is by a PhD professor. I photographed him at the college I worked for. You'd think the publisher would need permission to use that photo. That's from Joanne.
They do need permission, and I would recommend that you contact a copyright attorney at the very least, because I suspect the work is not registered, but at the very least, you might be able to get a licensing payment for the use of your work.
Well, yeah.
Or you might be able to shut the whole thing down.
I'm sounding like Alan, sorry. What is she an employee of the university?
The creator?
Yeah, the photographer.
Well, we need to ask that question.
As a representative of the university.
Yeah, I photographed him at the college I worked for, but she doesn't say
she was a photographer.
Duty.
And how long ago did you find out? That's the million-dollar question right there.
Well, that's another important question.
It's a textbook, so unlikely that it's a million-dollar question, but you never know.
Well, but if she is an employee and he's an employee, the work that she created would be work made for hire, and therefore available for the professor to use. But I certainly think out of pure decency, given her attribution.
And correct attribution.
Spell my name correctly, please.
Oh, well. All right, Eileen, I should say, thank you very much for that one. The number is 800-348-2551. One more email, then we'll take a break, and then we'll go back to the phones. This one is from Donna. I hope you didn't discuss this already. I've got 10 years of photos on my Facebook page. For some, I've made prints and then designed cards, greeting cards. This is not copyrighted material. Am I out of luck if somebody decides to use one of them? Is the only way to protect these photos to delete my Facebook page? And that's from Donna.
Well, first of all, it's copyrighted when you create it. Second of all, what was the rest of the question?
How does she protect them other than just taking them all off her site?
Well, I think you immediately go and start registering them.
Yeah, the ones that you think might have legs, might have some
commercial
viability.
The ones you've already had printed.
Right, the ones you like the best and that other people like the best. I mean, you certainly don't need to register every snapshot that you took. And
is putting it on that social media platform considered publication, or could she register them as unpublished?
Didn't we have this conversation?
Yes, we did. That's why I'm asking.
It's not considered publication because, you know, you're...
So she could register them as unpublished 10 at a time.
10 at a time isn't, but there's, they've changed all these rules.
10 at a time.
For photographers too?
Oh, for photographers, I'm sorry. Photographers is 750 at
a time.
There you
go.
Well,
yeah.
That's
now we're talking.
One month's worth of photos on
there
Facebook.
There you go.
All right, I'll tell you what, let's take a break here. 800-348-2551 is the number. The email address is voxpop@wamc.org. Polly Law, Paul Rapp, Bill Westwood join us. We'll be back. It's not the science form. It's the copyright form. Hey, you want to take a couple of physics questions? Bill Westwood is here. He is one of the country's leading medical illustrators. Polly Law is past president of the Graphic Artists Guild and a very active artist with an Etsy shop already, Art Words T-Prints. Paul Rapp is an intellectual property lawyer and writer. And if you guys have a question out there, give us a call, 800-348-2551. A couple more emails, and then back to the phones. Mike in Rexford, can you comment on how much a copyright holder can charge for the use of their work? Any guidelines or rules for this?
Nope.
If you're a graphic artist, you can always check the Graphic Artists Guild Handbook of Pricing and Ethical Guidelines. They survey the industry and get norms for whatever use you're looking at. There's a chart in there.
Yeah, basically, it sort of depends on what you're doing, what the market is, and how much you can get someone to pay you. There is no... There are no books that say it's got to be this much or that much.
Yeah, who your client is and all of that. I mean, running into that with a lot of film, it used to be, you know, the numbers for film were, you know, in some kind of range. But now that you've got so many platforms for these things to go to, you know, I mean, Netflix has got their scale. Amazon Prime has their scale. And it's just, the numbers are all over the place, and it's basically whatever you can agree to.
Okay, will the media landscape coalesce at some point, and
there'll be more?
It'll get more.
It also depends on the market. When I was doing advertising work in the pharmaceutical area, prices, I could get five times the price that I could get for a magazine cover, or maybe even 10 times that price for the same piece of artwork.
Yeah.
Okay. It all depends on what's the value of the artwork to the buyer.
Yeah.
And if the buyer is a pharmaceutical company and they're going to go out and make $10 million off of this ad that you're creating, the artwork for the ad, then they're willing to pay a higher price in order to get it.
Understood.
And you're working in a very specialized field.
In a very specialized
field. This is not the work he does. I can't do. I don't have the training.
You can do livers, Polly.
I can do livers. Okay. Oh, thank God.
Maybe you could do some silk screens of his
livers.
Pictures.
Yeah.
You
know? Yeah, I'll take photographs and bleed the information out and then do silk screens.
There you go.
I'll see you in court.
Bill. All right. Oh, this is exciting. This is from Susan. How do you appraise the value of an artist's copyright? Would a regular appraiser be able to do this? It seems like a lot of folks don't understand value over time.
Most appraisers
think a famous artist.
That's very, very true. I don't know how you would find an appraiser who could do that.
Probably they could for someone like Norman Rockwell,
right,
or some of the, you know, N.C. Wyeth, some
but
people
there are
like
historical
that,
values
yeah,
there.
Yeah.
If it's somebody who's selling, and then you can go to Art America, you could even go to eBay and see what stuff is going for, you know. But
most art appraisers don't handle commercial art.
Yeah.
All right, this is the last email and then to the phones. This is from Neil. I recently read an article on a creator who uses artificial intelligence and machine learning models to create art. As a matter of academic curiosity, where does copyright law land on this? Oh, we don't have much time left.
It's up in the air, and I believe that one patent has already been turned down that was created by AI.
That was just a couple of weeks ago,
right,
I believe.
Right, and... the law, as I understand it, says that work has to be created by a human being.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, it's the same issue when that monkey grabbed the camera and took a selfie a few years ago.
I didn't see that.
Yeah.
Oh, the monkey smiling in the camera?
It was famous. The guy who owned
the camera claimed the copyright to it, and this thing was published all over the place because the monkey's adorable. He's smiling in the camera.
Until
he rips your face off, it's all good fun. That's true.
Whoever, whether it's the copyright office or the court, said, no, the monkey is the author, and monkeys, you know, at this point, don't.
Okay. Well,
and they've run into that too with when they have elephants painting.
Right.
You know.
Okay. Is that good?
Which.
So Neil goes on, and I think that we have the answer. Does the creator own the copyright, even though the AI created it? And the answer is yes.
I would say the creator who you know invoked the AI to create this should claim it.
That was the last question Neil had. Does that person who created the AI have any claim? When will this be straightened out?
About 150 years.
Okay.
Yeah, it'll be a while.
Right, Hopefully after we're all gone.
I think that's a fair bet. Let's go to Richard in Dalton. Richard, you're on.
Hello.
Hi, Richard. Hey, Richard.
Hello.
Hello. Go ahead.
Yes.
All right. Yes.
Yeah, hi. This is Richard.
Splendid.
I have a question. I have a question. Is I'm starting a new company, and I have a logo that was created for me. When it gets registered, does it have to be registered in connection with the name of the company? Because it's used without the name of the company. Thank you.
Okay, hang in there, Richard.
It's a trademark.
It would either be a trademark, or if it was unique enough, it could be copyrighted.
And elaborate enough, yeah.
Yeah.
It could be copy. You could register the
but
copyright.
But trademark is going to be your main protection.
Yeah, and the trademark is through the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office. Or you could get a state trademark if you're in Dalton, so you're close to the border, so you probably have a bunch of interstate business. But you can get a state trademark, which is easier and cheaper to get. But what you're really talking about here is a trademark, and you can get it for a logo, and you get it for specific categories of goods and services. But, you know, like Bill said, if it's elaborate enough that it warrants copyright protection, you can get that too.
Richard, would you like to follow up?
No, I think that answers my question. Thank you, panel.
Good luck.
Thanks a lot for the question. Now, I don't remember the specifics of this, but we've talked about trademarks before. Don't you have to be an active business? In other words, if you go out of business or you stop doing that business, that trademark goes away.
Right. Yeah. You have to use the trademark.
Your protection goes away.
Use it or lose it.
Yeah. You have to get the, you know, you have to be actively using the trademark in order to register the trademark. They don't do them sort of in absentia.
All right. Let's go out to Utica. Hello, Louise in Utica. You're on.
Hi. Thank you. We've been hearing, I think, a lot from people asking questions of songwriters when they seem to have done both the words and the music. What is the complication, if anything, for copywriting if you have a lyricist and a composer? Thank you.
Well, that becomes a matter of an agreement between the two of them. If they're writing the music and the words together, they could make a claim to be joint authors where everything is 50-50 and neither one of them can go out and exploit the work. If you're putting music to pre-existing lyrics or you're putting lyrics to pre-existing music, then there's a good argument to be made that there's two separate copyrights, one for the writer of the lyrics and the other for the composer of the music. And then how they want to split that, the proceeds between them becomes a matter of negotiation. I mean, the
Copyright Office generally doesn't care about that.
No.
No, it's contractual.
Yeah. I mean, you start with a presumption of 50-50, and then if there's reasons to divulge from that, you do.
Louise.
Yep, that was it. Thank you.
You betcha. Thank you for the call. And we go to Kingston and Caroline. You're on.
Hi. Okay, this pertains to usage of photos in a music video. Can I use a copyrighted photo without permission? And can I use regular photos that people submit with their permission? And then can I video myself in or outside of public places, let's say like Madison Square Garden, and use that footage in the music video?
Let's break it down.
Yes, let's do that.
The
let's
first
parse.
One is photographs that are already copyrighted.
Right. You can use them unless you can't use them unless fair use applies. That you're doing something transformational. That you know. Brief.
But fair use is a swamp.
Yeah. Yeah. So you got to be careful.
Wear your waders.
photographs that people send in to you with permission. Sure.
Yeah.
And then standing in front of Madison Square Garden or any place in public is fine. If it's publicly accessible,
if you're on the sidewalk,
if you're on the sidewalk, and you know you didn't sneak into somebody's house while they weren't looking, and filmed yourself, you know you're fine if you're out in a publicly accessible place.
Carolyn,
what about inside?
Only if you have permission to film inside.
Yeah, and if it's publicly accessible.
And I would have written permission.
Yeah. Ask Stephen Colbert.
That's fair enough.
Right.
Okay, yeah. What's the Colbert reference?
He got detained. His crew, was it him or just his crew?
His crew snuck into Congress, the Capitol, and we're filming stuff without any permission.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Can you imagine what Breitbart did with that?
Interesting. The number here is 800-348-2551. The email address is voxpop@wamc.org. It's the Copyright Forum with Bill Westwood, Polly Law, and Paul Rapp. To Stanfordville we go. John, you're on.
Hi. I own a mark for clothing that regularly appears being sold on Amazon by vendors. I've contacted Amazon, sent them a copy of the actual mark and the trademark office showing that I own it. They always reply to me saying that they think that I should contact the owner. Well, I am the owner, and they don't seem willing to help me get these people to stop using my mark without payment. Any ideas?
Contact an attorney.
Yeah, have them send a cease and desist.
Yes.
Yeah,
don't.
I mean, they have very specific procedures that you need to follow, and as you found out, they're usually not that bright about responding either. But you know, I've gotten stuff thrown off of Amazon a couple of times. You really have to cross your T's and dot your I's when you make the submission and follow their instructions to a T.
Yeah, but I would contact an attorney to you know, when somebody like that, a corporation like that, is not responding, you need to have a little additional muscle to get things changed.
You need some letterhead.
Yeah.
Exactly.
All right, John, good luck. Thanks for the call. We go to Woodstock, New York. And Joe, no, that's the wrong button. Sorry, everyone. That was me. Joe in Woodstock, you're on.
Yes, this is, I think, a fairly simple matter. A book that came out originally in 1936 was Crown's first book. My father was the author. Huh. It went through three editions, in which the last edition was 64, and I did most of the illustrations. It then went out of print. There was a clause in the archaic contract that allowed for the author to claim rights with a procedure with a registered letter. Mm-hmm. Another publisher was interested in reissuing it. I got Crown to send me the copyright, and then the second publisher fell through. And I just found recently that the book has been pirated and was published first in Mumbai, and then it seems to be being published in Great Britain now. A, what can I do? B, have I lost the rights to it by just being slothful and not doing anything?
The Mumbai thing, I don't think you can do anything about.
Are they signatories to the
It doesn't
Berne
matter
convention?
Because you have to get an attorney in Mumbai. And the odds of that are slim. On the other hand, the situation in, I've just run across this, the situation in Great Britain might offer a little bit of a solution. I just, at a professional meeting last month, there was a copyright attorney there talking who has connections in Great Britain, and I would certainly be happy to put you in touch with this person who felt that he could help someone find an attorney in Great Britain. And damages in Great Britain, no country has damages as great as the U.S., but damages in Great Britain are at least a little more reasonable.
Yeah. I mean, one suggestion. I mean, first of all, you can use this as a selling point to a new publisher to get the book out. You can say, look, it's being pirated in a couple of countries that I know of, and, you know, here's an opportunity. The other thing,
well,
depending on what you want to spend.
Have I lost?
The other thing, depending on what you want to spend, if you engage a international law firm that's going to have offices in London and Mumbai, you know, like one-stop shopping.
But I mean, will that be worth it if you have to spend all that money?
Yeah,
because
you're talking about the $600 to $700 an hour guys. So,
yikes!
But that's a way to do it.
How much that would?
Yeah.
He's concerned though that he's waited too long to assert his rights. Is that the case?
Was the work originally? The work was originally copyrighted by the original publisher. Is that correct?
Crown, yes. And then they transferred it to me, but there was no activity in that transaction. Okay.
And you never registered that. You never registered that work.
We just registered the assignment.
No, I don't think so.
How long have you been sitting on this?
Oh, this maybe 15, 18 years.
Could be a problem.
The publisher that I was negotiating with, that collapsed about 10 years ago. The infringement I was notified about was probably about 15 years ago. And that was the Mumbai one. And this thing about the Great Britain, I just learned a matter of weeks ago.
Okay, well, the Britain one then is fair game if you just found out about it.
Yeah, right. I have a question though. You said you did a new set of illustrations for the work.
Well, no, the third edition, which was 1964.
Yes.
I did most of the illustrations for it, but it wasn't acknowledged. I mean, it was my father's book.
So you didn't register the illustrations.
No,
or you assumed they were covered under the copyright of the book?
They were covered under Crown's contract with him.
Okay.
And the book went, it was 1952, and it went out of print in 64.
Okay.
And I gained the copyright from Crown in about the turn of the century.
Okay.
All right, we're almost out of time here. I'm sorry to say, Joe.
Yeah.
Anybody want to finish this up? And then we will
contact
Phil. Well, if
Phil.
He wants to contact me at westwood@capital.net, I'll see if I can give him a name of someone to talk to.
And if you're going to do something, because it's going into the public domain in about 10 years.
Right.
So,
yeah.
Do it fast.
Yeah, I wouldn't wait.
All right. Bill Westwood, you gave your email just now. How do people get in touch with you online? You have a website, right?
I do, westwoodmedical.com.
Paul Rapp, if somebody wanted to talk to you, how would they do that?
My email is paul@paulrapp.com. My website is paulrapp.com.
And Polly Law, the brand new Etsy thing?
Art Words T Prints.
And T is spelled
T-E-A.
Well, thank you all for being here, and we'll see you soon.
Thanks, Ray.
Thank you.
Support comes from Ambrose Electric Standby Power, an electrical contractor providing sales service and installation of residential and commercial Generac automatic standby generators serving the greater Capital District for over 40 years. AmbroseLEC.com. College Street Motors, Amherst, Massachusetts, for over 30 years, specializing in foreign and domestic car and truck repair and 24-hour towing. Full-service gas includes checking of fluids, tire pressure, and window washing. CollegeStreetMotors.com. And the Arkell Museum at Canajoharie, presenting oil paintings by Winslow Homer and American artists, including Hassam and Innes, in the original art gallery, arkellmuseum.org. Once again, thanks to Bill Westwood, Polly Law, and Paul Rapp for being here today. Thank you for the copyright questions. They were good ones. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Ed Rosen screened the calls. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, the Stamp and Coin Guys return. Assuming they don't run into any trouble on the Jersey Turnpike, they'll be here at 2 to answer your questions.